You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
And welcome to show number 137. It keeps getting bigger and bigger, and we don't know how to do it. Thanks. I have clapping on here somewhere that I can hit the little button.
Just yeah, clap. I got one over here, too.
Yeah, hard to believe.
It's something new every week, so it's just...
Well, we're trying to... Modern technology, you know. We're going to get AI to do everything, so including my job.
And mine.
We were talking about AI yesterday.
Yes, we were.
Pretty at length about the things that we are going to see if it can and cannot do, and it'll be interesting to see. We'll keep everybody updated. Yeah. So I went to the car dealer the other day to tell him that there was a noise. I sound like my dad. There would be noises in his hubcaps, and he would go and bitch at the Cadillac dealer. There's a noise coming from the left front hubcap. What is it? Yeah, well, is it a rock? Did something come loose? So on one of my cars, in the driver's side passengers or rear passenger seat, it sounds like a broken shock absorber. Mm-hmm. It's a brand new car. Mm-hmm. So. Hey, I don't even know if it has a shock absorber.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say.
Do they even have those anymore?
Probably fiberglass, leaf spring.
But it sounds, it's rattling. It's a weird noise. And so I felt like my dad when I went to them and griped. And you know when you're explaining to a mechanic something and they really want to roll their eyes, but they're not. But you can just feel that any moment 100%. They would just like to be rolling their eyes and, you know.
Internally, they're rolling their eyes.
Oh, you know they're internally rolling their eyes. Absolutely.
Oh, by the way, I happened to have this Torque channel on last night, and there were two things. Dirty Old Cars was a show where it's basically they detail, they buy a car, and they have 2 days to fix it and sell it. But the other thing was King of Cars.
Right.
We were mentioning car dealer.
Right.
And it was that they shoot Tobin Dodge in Henderson, which is outside of Las Vegas.
Right.
And it's like a meat grinder. It's one of these big dealerships where they're ringing the bell and pressure on the guys to sell. And it was almost unnerving.
I was in a dealership not too long ago, somewhere close to here. And you walk into the main showroom and there's no cars in the showroom. Mm-hmm. It's all desks.
Yeah.
And it must be 200
right.
desks in this big, huge.
That's what this
dealership.
Was like.
Yeah.
Exactly
crazy.
Like it. So. And they were, you know, and then they had a dunk tank. So they were going to put the managers who didn't sell each one of their people on their team to sell a car by the end of the day or they would get dunked in the tank.
Nice.
It's like, come on, man.
Nice. So how many new cars in inventory?
How many?
I'm going to say 970.
Oh, you're so off. 942.
Okay. Oh, back down the other way.
Yeah, we're going the other way.
Seems like a lot of cars coming in. That's why I said
that. And, of course, there's things going on externally that people are taking their car to in hopes that maybe they can get it sold. And, you know, listen, I don't blame them. If there's an opportunity, take it. We get it that, you know, we can't sell every single car. If we did, we'd be in trouble. We'd have a really good, you know, week, and then they would be over.
There's a good flow. There's a good flow coming in. The weather's getting nice, and got some cars.
Our consignments have been picking up.
Yeah, we don't hold them hostage.
No, we do not. And you say, where did we sell cars to last week? I better clear my throat for this. How about New Market, Maryland, Briarcliff, New York, Richland Hills, Texas, Leicester, Pennsylvania, Fairfield, California, Nampa, Idaho, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Jacksonville, Florida, Glendale, Maryland, Maryland, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Smithport, Pennsylvania, Morgantown, Pennsylvania, right here, Havertown, Pennsylvania, Summers, New York, Huntington, Oregon, Traverse City, Michigan, Westchester, Pennsylvania. Actually, two to Westchester.
And that detail show had one of the detailers was in Morgantown,
right,
North Carolina.
Oh, of course, yeah. Anyway, thanks to the Pat Travers Band for our theme music. And some new arrivals that we got this week are really interesting. Did you see the Dodge Power Wagon?
I sure did.
Well, of course you did, because you wrote the description.
I sure did, yeah.
My goodness gracious. Battleship gray and black over black. This thing is full-on custom. And it's a Dodge Series it's a 1940 Dodge Series VC G502 Power Wagon pickup. God, what a name. What a name on that. Full-on custom build, rebuilt Cummins 4BT turbo diesel, T19 four-speed manual, It's got heat and air, power brakes and steering. This thing was a work truck back in the day like no other. I don't remember seeing them even as a kid. I don't ever remember seeing them.
Right. They were gone by the time we were kids. Yeah.
Yeah. In the 60s, I don't think you ever saw these around, mm-hmm. but boy, they're popular. You see them at Barrett Jackson and Meekum and they're ringing the bell.
Yeah.
Prices
yeah.
on these things. Crazy.
And none of them as high as this one.
No, this one might be right up there in the stratosphere area.
I know Garrett had to climb the tires to get up to the half.
You kind of got to do the Spidey Man uh-huh. thing to get up it. You got to bounce from one tire to the other tire, grab something, hope that you're not grabbing the wrong handle or the whip antenna.
It's very farm-like, and there's no little ladders.
No, there's no ladders. You have to carry a separate ladder with you somehow, I guess. But anyway, a really cool piece. And, mm-hmm. and you know, these were all like weapons carriers and carry-alls and ambulances back in the day, and they looked like they would go anywhere.
That's true.
You know, it's like the Lamborghini LM002, mm-hmm. which actually is going to be one at Radnor Hunt.
Is that right?
They've got one coming to the show. It'll mm-hmm. be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you get a chance, go check out the Radnor Hunt Conqueror. It's in September.
Wow.
A little ways away, but sure. I mean, it'll be here before we know it.
I think that's what Mission Barbecue uses as their remote
No, that's
vehicle.
Actually an M37. That's a military, that's a military truck.
Yeah. Oh, very good.
Well, thank you for all that.
And we've had those here as well.
We have. We've had an M37.
But it's
here.
Similar. It's very yeah. similar.
How about the 1926 Pontiac Series 6 two-door coach? Mm-hmm. Now, what's significant about 1926, you say?
I wrote it, so I'm not going to say.
you're being humble here.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know. Tell us.
First,
tell us
why it would be the first year for Pontiac, 1926.
Okay, that's
remember,
right.
we had the 1926 race car Speedster that was here that they ended up donating to the AACA
that's
Museum,
right.
and it's in their lobby now, mm-hmm. or is supposed to be in their lobby at some point.
Yep.
First year for Pontiac, 1926. And that one, the one we had, was the first race car ever built by Pontiac or that was turned into a race car.
Mm-hmm.
Light Arizona gray and black over gray. First year, multiple AACA awards and the Pontiac Owners Club or Pontiac Oakland Club International Award. This thing is near perfect, as we like to say. We don't want to say perfect because somebody will prove us wrong. We're certain.
Always.
And what an amazing car. I mean, to have lasted, you know, now 98 years as the first year of anything, which is really pretty interesting. I wish Pontiacs were still around, as we all do, because we all love
sure.
Pontiacs. We were all Pontiac guys.
That's
right
true.
Here. So if you get a chance to see these, you can see all these cars on our website, classicautomall.com. Another new arrival, 1936 Mercedes-Benz 230 Saloon, mm-hmm. which is really an unusual car. Most of the 30s Mercedes-Benz you see are the big SSKs and 540Ks and 5 whatever. And this is a very unusual inline six is the power on it. It's got a real sinister look, doesn't it?
Yes, it does have a kind of a
I wonder where I got that from. From maybe from the write-up, I guess. Good job, Steve. Black over oxblood. And it's got a huge file of detailed notes and receipts and all that, which is so important, so critical. And we preach and preach and preach on that, how important it is. Don't throw any of that away. And mm-hmm. make sure that when the car goes somewhere, whether it's sold or whether you give it to somebody or whether you pass on and your family moves it on, make sure somebody knows about where all this paperwork is.
Sure.
Don't let it get lost.
Beautiful interior on this car, by the way.
Oh, really? And it's really an interesting looking car. It
mm-hmm.
really is. Black is a perfect color for this car.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Other new items in, 1976 Ford F-250 Ranger long bed, 4x4 pickup. This thing is really cool. Candy apple red and white over red and white. It's got a newer 390 cubic inch V8, so it's got plenty of power. this thing is really cool, and it's really big. It would be hard to park even at Walmart.
Another tall truck. And, you know, these things were, 20 years ago, these were a dime a dozen, and now they're super collectible.
I don't know how, you know, people used trucks until they were unusable.
Mm-hmm.
Duct tape and, you know, whatever it took to cobble them together, and they used them until they just finally just died, and they left them wherever they were
That's
parked.
True. In the field.
In the field, generally. and to find these trucks that weren't worked at, especially these F-250s.
Right.
You know, F-150s, mm-hmm. you can see more of a guy driving it around town, even back in the day. People didn't use pickup trucks quite like they do today. Like, my pickup truck has never been in the dirt.
Never will be.
Probably. I think I put something in the back to haul from Lowe's or something. My wife said, "You're going to scratch it." And I'm like, "Well, that's what it's for."
Yeah, we have to put slippers on before we get into your truck. Isn't that right? Isn't that right, according to Kathy?
Yeah, and take your shoes off when you come to our house.
I've seen some work trucks. It's like, that truck owes that guy nothing.
Yeah,
exactly. He has worked every last breath out of it.
Absolutely. How about the 1978 Mercedes-Benz 450 SL convertible, new inventory? Ruby red metallic over bamboo. Three owners from new. Garage kept. I mean, this thing, known history from new. This paint is unbelievable.
It really is.
That ruby red metallic is stunning.
It is. This is the one with the wheels, too. Uh-huh. Right? Yeah.
It's yeah.
Got,
I don't sure know what that was. Is.
Yeah, it's got an interesting stance, a beautiful paint job, mm-hmm. and I don't expect this one to last very long. It's priced right.
Yeah, it's priced right. A regular 450 SL usually don't last very long because, you know, like you say in the description, these things were considered the, you know, if you were the wealthy class, the 450 SL was the car of choice, mm-hmm. you know. You had a 450 SL, a Rolex watch, and a Learjet.
I mean, you lived in Los Angeles. If you, if you saw one, you were doing, that was an important person.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And they were, I mean, the 450 SL was the most iconic rich person, even more so than a Rolls Royce, really.
It was, yeah.
Something about that 450 mm-hmm. SL just had that look about it. But, beautiful car, and a lot of them are in less than stellar condition that we find from time to time. And you have to be careful with older German cars mm-hmm. and British cars. Listen, if they're well sorted like this one, then you don't have much to worry about. But to go buy one at an auction and it's $4,000 or $5,000, that'll be the first check you write, and that'll probably be the smallest check you write. Just be careful. Don't tread into it because it seems cheap. I get calls from guys, and we've talked about this, where a guy will say, oh, I was at an auction, and then I bought this Jaguar for $5,000. I'm like, oh, tell me a little bit about it. Well, it's true mileage unknown, and it's this, and it's that, and all these red flags. And I said, you know, the ideal time to call me was prior to the purchase.
Yeah, pre-purchase inspections are always good, especially with German and British cars.
Sure. You want somebody who knows what they're looking for and what to look for. There are pitfalls within these cars and within cars of this generation and era that you know, need to be addressed and need to be known about. Last but not least, the 2023 Dodge Challenger RT Scat Pack Wide Body Plum Crazy Over Black. 143 axle miles. Is that right?
Yeah.
140.
Not a typo, as I say in the description.
I mean, is this the last of its kind?
It's pretty much. Well, I don't know. I think muscle cars or I should say, internal combustion engine muscle cars from Dodge are on a hiatus.
Right.
They'll make it a grand comeback at some point in 5 years or so, and then everybody will buy them. Meanwhile, there was a big rush to buy these final ones.
And that's why this one probably won't last very long, especially with, you know, basically delivery miles on it. So if you get a chance, like I said, go to our website, classicautomall.com. You can see all of our new inventory. And when we return, our special guest is going to be with us via Zoom, Jeff Mason, the CEO and president of the Piston Foundation, among other things that he does automotive. We'll talk to Jeff in just a couple of minutes.
Ever since the first time you saw it, perhaps even as a child, you knew you wanted one. Now, you're at a point in your life where you have the means to buy and keep one. Your significant other is even in agreement. But where and how can you find one? And trust you know as much as you can about it before the purchase. That's why there's ClassicAutoMall.com. 1,000 classic vehicles of almost every conceivable make, model, and year. All under one climate-controlled roof. You can visit and look to your heart's delight. Or do everything online from the comfort of your own home. Shipping nearly everywhere worldwide. Classic Auto Mall can make your dream come true. Visit the World Wide Web. ClassicAutoMall.com.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. And via Zoom today, we have our special guest, our special, special guest, Jeff Mason, CEO and president of the Piston Foundation. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks. Great to be here with you.
Yeah, we didn't realize you were in Denver, so we could have done this a little bit later, I guess, giving you a little bit of more sleep in time. But it is 9 o'clock there, right?
Yeah, it's fine. We're up and working here. It's a hard working town here in the West.
The Piston Foundation, a fantastic organization. Our friend Judy Stropas was telling us about it and telling us about you, and that's why we wanted to have you on the show and talk about what you guys are doing. Now you're based in, as we talked off air, you're based in Connecticut. Is that correct?
And we are. We're based out of Stamford, Connecticut, and that is where the organization was founded. Our founder, Robert Minnick, was based there. But in truth, we're actually a virtual organization. We have, you know, folks across the country. Me being one of them, my roots are back east. So our kind of our home base is the Northeast, you know, car community.
Connecticut is an amazing car culture. When we go to Greenwich, to the Concord there, and to some other events that we go to in Connecticut, we're always amazed at how many cool cars are in that part of the world. It's a hotbed for vehicles. A lot of people, I guess, from New York City live in Connecticut and commute in and have their bigger houses there, I guess, and then keep all their cars. And, you know, you can't keep your car in New York City, certainly not a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or something along those lines. So it certainly makes sense. So the Piston Foundation was, how long, what, 3 years you guys have been going or longer? Or is it?
Yeah, you're right. This is the beginning of our fourth year. So while the name sounds like we've been around for a long time, we're really just the startup. And we were founded in 2021. We awarded our first scholarships in 2022, our second group in 2023. So this spring we'll be awarding our fourth group of scholarships to aspiring collector car mechanics.
Fantastic. And these scholarships allow them to attend online or in-person universities or trade schools, or how does that?
Yeah, so it's tuition assistance for young people who are interested in a career in classic and collector cars, who are attending an automotive program, an accredited automotive program. It could be a 2-year program, could be a 4-year program, and we have students at local community colleges with an auto tech program, and we have students at 4-year schools like McPherson in their restoration program.
Is there more than McPherson? Is McPherson the only 4-year accredited school at this point in time? That's the only one I've ever heard of. I don't know that there's more.
I believe it is the only 4-year restoration program.
Right.
But we have relationships with other schools that have restoration programs, such as Pennsylvania College of Technology, also called Penn College.
Yep.
University of Northern Ohio has a program, among others. And then there's also several schools that have motorsport programs. One of the ones that we work with over the last couple of years is Lanier Technical College in Gainesville, Georgia, has a very excellent motorsports program that provides a lot of techs that are going into NASCAR and IMSA racing, but also a lot of their students are also interested in classic cars. So there's a number of specialty programs around the country, but that's not really required for the students that we support, meaning the thing that we're really supporting is that interest in going into classic and collector cars. And, you know, if they're starting at a local auto tech program in their community college, that's perfectly fine, right? We all need to get those basics of automotive systems, all that basic information, and that's a great place to start, and then they'll hopefully move on into our apprenticeship program.
Sure. And of course, the shame of what we've done to our education system in the United States is gotten rid of shop programs in high school and auto shop and wood shop and all the good things that a lot of people needed to do. We always say this, most of our customers are guys who were in those shop classes who made a career out of it, who a plumber who became a plumbing company, a woodworker who became a framer. They all built businesses out of it. They're all very successful. And it proves that you don't have to have a traditional four-year degree or in, you know, liberal arts or whatever it is you want to get your degree in anymore.
Yep.
And it's
That's certainly true. And there's definitely a movement that is recognizing that here in the U.S. that we've actually lost something when we eliminated, you know, technical education from high schools and, you know, basically, created a giant gap there. And when, if you ask anybody in the trades of any trade, you know, what's the first thing that stops somebody from considering that trade is a career. It's that technical education at the high school level.
Right.
That was the first gap that interested students couldn't get across.
Right. And the perception is that, oh, that's the best you can do is be a carpenter or a plumber or whatever, or a guy who works on cars. Well, guess what? How much does the guy at Mercedes-Benz, the lead mechanic at Mercedes-Benz make? You know, I mean, at the local dealership. I bet he makes more than most of the guys he went to school with.
Right. More than a marketing, first-year marketing coordinator at a big tech company. That's for sure.
Exactly right. And a much in desire position. I mean, you talk to anybody in any kind of trade type business, whether it's mechanical, electrical, plumbing, they're all hurting for people. They're hurting to find people. And that's going to happen with these classic cars. And there's more and more people, you know, contrary to popular belief, the hobby is getting more popular. And that's because of a lot of the things that happen on television with the auctions and all that. And we're seeing people coming in here, first time buyers. Guess what? Their first question is, where do I get it worked on? You know, who am I going to call? Yeah. You know, and that's why we don't have a repair facility here. We would be overwhelmed as many cars as we sell.
Yeah, you would. I love what you guys do. Your place is just amazing. All the cars. It's just amazing to walk through.
Well, the nice thing is that I think all of us are contributing to the perpetuation of this hobby. And that's what we want it to be. We're brutally honest about what we do here with cars and the conditions and things like that, because we want people to know exactly what it is. The reason you're getting this car for X is because of this. The reason you would pay Y is because of that. And we want people to know that, but we also do want to be able to say, hey, and by the way, here's your guy you take your Thunderbird down to.
You know, the truth is, you know, the hobby, you're absolutely right. It's grown, and as you know, it's grown in interest. There's been a lot more exposure for it. And of course, we all know that, you know, cars as an asset class, as an investment, you know, is something that exists now that didn't exist a couple decades ago for most vehicles that people would invest in today. And with all of that, you know, the truth about the career is there's no lack of interest. It's not a lack of interest that keeps young people out of this career path. It's really a lack of access. And that access comes from two things: access to the education that can allow them to turn their interest into sort of an idea of a career, and then access to hands-on training. We know that this is something you have to learn on the job. You know, the education you would get in any automotive program is not enough to make you a professional.
Sure.
So you have to be able to make that transition to a hands-on, on-the-job training situation. And that's why the second piece of our program is scholarships and then apprenticeships. And that's what we've just launched this year. We have a pilot program to take qualified, you know, tech school graduates or somebody with enough experience and is ready to be in an apprenticeship situation. Exactly like we used to know apprenticeships, right?
Absolutely. What happened to that? Where did that go? How did that just disappear, you know?
Right. And like other trades have, you know, developed apprenticeship programs to make sure that they have a career path for people to follow. And that does not exist for the collector car world yet. That is exactly what the Piston Foundation is building.
That's fantastic. And, you know, it's an ongoing education thing. It's not like you can just go to school for 4 years and go, okay, I know everything there is to know. That's just an ongoing thing that goes on. And learning some of the, you know, the things that Gene Winfield, who can bend metal and, you know, make it look beautiful. I mean, that's art. That's not mechanical. That's not electric. That's art is what that guy, somebody like him.
Yep.
And how do you teach that?
I was going to say there's just that there is that craft component. I mean, we could talk about starting the career and getting that technical education, but you know, as you just pointed out, at some point that technical education, technical knowledge transitions into craft as people go deeper into that career. And you know, one of the problems we have right now is we've got a lot of today's craftspeople are retiring, and you know, we need to be able to get them paired up with apprentices to transfer their skills, you know, before they've left the shop.
Well, and the nice thing about apprenticeship is it's good free labor. So you can just get a guy to come. Yeah. You know,
paid apprentices.
Yeah, there you go.
As you learn.
And they should be paid apprentices, really, because a lot of people, I think part of the problem with the apprentice program was that people were doing just that. They were kind of taking advantage of the situation. Oh, we'll just bring a bunch of high school kids over here and we'll put them in the apprentice program and they'll empty trash and mop the floors. And what good does that do anybody? You know, that doesn't further what they're trying to do, And what you're trying to do is teach somebody to learn something that can help you in future years, right?
Yeah. It's workforce development. And this has to be done with, you know, a real plan in place, a method to this, but a career path that a young person can follow, right? It can't be stop start, because those gaps let people, you know, divert into other industries and use those skills. Right. So,
and a lot of people don't know how to get into a hobby or know that there's avenues that they can go down. I remember the guy who started the Khan Academy, which is a great, educational thing that talked about the best developers in the world are probably in mom's basement right now. And they're better developers than the top guy at IBM. And that's an old guy term.
Yeah.
Who says IBM anymore? But you know what I mean? And it's amazing. There's so much talent out there and they may not even know that there's an avenue for them to go down or a path.
Sure.
You know,
and you know, tech companies who rely on those coding skills develop their own career pathways when, you know, the education system couldn't provide that. And they, you know, did away with, you know, the requirement of a computer science degree and said, look, come into our 2-year program. We'll teach you everything we know that you know, that we need you to know. And you can bypass that 4-year college and, you know, they've created their own workforce development program, and many of the large companies have done that.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, and from a business standpoint, and everything has
exactly
to be, you have to look at it that way. I mean, it's a business.
So
when we return, we'll continue with Jeff Mason from the Piston Foundation. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall Show. Just a minute.
Whether you want to buy or sell a classic, collectible, or special interest vehicle, you need to visit the Classic Auto Mall website for more information. If you're looking to buy, you can easily search our inventory of more than 1,000 vehicles on the web at classicautomall.com. And if you'd like to know all the advantages of selling your car through consignment, the information's available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, and convenient. Plus, we sell worldwide. We're always adding new vehicles to our inventory, so make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on social media, and check our website, classicautomall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than 6 decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE, or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/AWR. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/AWR. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
Hey, folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday, 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember, folks, I'm not angry. I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. We're speaking with Jeff Mason from the President and COO of the Piston Foundation and talking about the higher education of auto, not just mechanics anymore. I guess that's a wrong term to use, right? It's not auto mechanics anymore. It's auto technicians, right?
We tend to say technicians, yeah, but, you know, that might be just a generational thing.
Sure. Yeah, it's like custodian and janitor and all right. those old things that they say. And the McPherson College, we touched upon in the previous segment, my goodness gracious, what a thing that they have built there. And, of course, they just got a pretty nice endowment, too, so that didn't hurt. I guess $1 billion they got donated.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, they've got a great program out there. We have a number of students that we support that we've provided scholarships to that are at McPherson, and the program is excellent. They've got a great runway to, you know, build on. And I'm actually heading out there at the end of the month to their car show.
Yeah.
To see some of my Piston scholars that are out there, which is great because I don't get to see them very often
in the wild.
It's great to meet them. You know, they're all of the young people that we've supported, what we call our Piston scholars. You know, they're just remarkably driven, interesting, knowledgeable, young people. And when you meet them, you just know that that's the kind of person that's going to make a success in this industry because they've got the grit. They've got the intelligence. They're good communicators. You know, it's just, they're really great people to meet. And I, you know, it's real honor for us to be, to have them, within our organization and to support them on their career journey.
Well, and it's crucial that you pick the right person for the scholarship, right? I mean, that's as important as anything.
It is. We support, people often ask us, you know, what schools are we associated with and all of this? And we don't associate ourselves with schools. We have students at particular schools, and they tend to gravitate to programs like McPherson, but we really focus on the person, not the program. So there are other charities in the classic car world that are private charities that focus on supporting programs, but Piston Foundation is a public charity. So we work for the car community. We have no other stakeholders but the car community. Sure. We don't have a private equity agenda of any kind.
Right.
And we focus on the person, not the program. So I'm looking for young people with the interest in building a career in classic cars, but also, you know, with the grit, with the drive to make themselves successful in it.
And your first graduates are coming up in a 4-year program. Is that next year or this year or next
year?
Actually,
we've got some this year. We had one last year, Victoria Bruno, who is out at working for Patrick Otis in California.
Yeah.
She is a Ferrari specialist, just has great skills at engine building. She's just remarkable. But we've got several other graduates. I think we have 6 graduates this year. We're starting to sort of get, you know, cross that threshold of having graduates. And I guess next year we'll have alumni and all of that. So it's great.
Yeah, it's glad to see the fruits of your labor paying off and in tangible ways. It's nice to see that, I would imagine. And, of course.
Yeah, and we also do some things to try and keep our scholars connected with each other because they will be, you know, their peers as they move forward in the industry. So we've started something called the Connecting Rod, which is just a forum for our Piston scholars. We invite significant people from the industry to come and speak at that. We had our first event with Rod Emery of Emery Motorsports. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just trying to get our scholars connected to each other as well as connected to the industry.
Right. What's the male-female ratio of scholars now? Is it close? Is it a lot of women are getting into motorsports and mechanical stuff and automotive and all that?
Yep. So far it's 10%,
right,
which, you know, is, we definitely want to see that higher. We have more female applicants every year. So I think that's going to grow.
Right.
It's a bit of, you know, it's about awareness that, you know, that young people know that we have a scholarship program. But also, you know, that they're getting encouragement to go into this career path. So, 10% to date, but I'm sure that will change pretty dramatically over the next couple of years.
Well, in the old days, you know, our apprenticeship was the guy down the street who had his hood open in his driveway, and you wandered down there on your Schwinn Stingray and just watch what he was doing, and he'd, hey, hand me that wrench and do this and do that, and you started learning things about cars, and that was a cool learning basis. But no, I don't think many of us thought, oh, can you, I always wanted to be in this industry. I didn't really know much about how to be in it until I went to a classic car auction and I went, ding, ding, this is interesting. And I think that's a lot of aha moments for people, whether it be Barrett Jackson on TV or Mecham or all these auction houses that people are seeing more and more of and realizing that. And the cool thing about it is it's much easier to work on a small block Chevy from the 60s than it is from a modern motor.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. You can sort it out. And I think what you just mentioned is something that's important for everybody to understand, particularly the people who are in this hobby and who have the capacity to maybe support a foundation like the Piston Foundation. And, you know, they sort of ask, well, like, you know, why aren't there more young people in these trades? And, you know, like, I just went down to the shop and knocked on the door and they gave me a broom. And 10 years later, I was a master mechanic. Well, I think one thing we have to remember is, you know, these young people are coming to it in a different way. I grew up in a time where we still had a garage to tinker in. That's not the case for most young people. They're growing up in a condo, in a townhouse, in an apartment. They may be, you know, in a city. They don't have access to those things. So they don't have the chance to tinker and, you know, build things like we did when, you know, junk K, you'd grab every Briggs and Stratton motor that was on the sidewalk and you'd go make Binny bikes. Well, kids just don't have that opportunity. It's a different world for them. And so they arrive at this, you know, at the threshold of this with a very different experience. Mm-hmm. And it may not have a lot of hand tools and things because they're not getting that in shop class. They don't have that access in high school. So they arrive at with a different set of skills. Their digital skills, which are native to them, are actually highly valuable in the way that restoration shops and automotive shops are changing. So they do bring valuable skills, but it's just a different set. So we've got to sort of backtrack and backfill on the hand skills, the technical skills, but the digital skills that might be a struggle for a 60-year-old, you know, craftsperson is natural for them. So we just have to understand that the path is a little different and we have to accommodate that.
We talked to an employee at one of the local shops around here and his whole training for working at the shop was YouTube. He would just, he just started going on YouTube when he was a young kid, learning how to fix something. Yep. And it just progressed from there. And he watched, you know, self educated, whatever you want to call medicated. It's just where my brain is. He self educated and became, you know, very successful. And now he's getting ready to take over and he's going to own the shop, after about 10 years and all of his education. He said, look, I looked for places to go to get an education and I couldn't seem to find anything that really fit.
And, you know, we had to wait for the next issue of Road and Track or Hot Rod Magazine to get new information. But yeah, these kids have access to, you know, everything that they need to be successful and they know how to use it. And that's it's a real value. And they naturally exploit, you know, those tools for their knowledge, but they still need guidance. They still need hands-on skills. They still need to learn how to be professionals.
Right.
They need to learn process and, you know, planning. You know, YouTube doesn't teach you that. It'll show you how to install the Holley carburetor, but it really doesn't teach you how to plan the whole engine rebuild, you know, and simply not for a customer who's paying the bill and document, you know, need you to document the work.
Right. How do you explain to a customer, you know, customer service and how do you explain to them why they need this done and what needs to happen and why you need your carburetor rebuilt, why this is important? I mean, you can't teach compassion. You can't teach, you know, empathy. You can't teach a lot of things through a YouTube video. You can learn how to fix something, but that's one little nugget of what it is that you do anymore. I mean, you know, a service rider at a dealership has got maybe one of the toughest jobs on the planet because you're trying to make everybody happy with a mechanical thing that was built by other people. And, you know, who knows how well it was done or what was right or what was wrong.
Yeah. So, we're very focused on, you know, supporting young people, essentially taking interested you know, car enthusiasts and giving them a career path so that they can look forward and think, okay, I'm really interested in this and I can see a way to turn my interest into a career. And I can see that that career has steps. I see that there's a way for me to get there. It's not going to be left up to chance.
Right. And that's where a lot of kids fall into that chance, if you will, the place that they can't get out of. And that's so, well, it's like you go to the Napa store or the local auto parts store and you ask the kid behind the counter, have you got a jet for a Holley car, you know, whatever. No, it's not in the computer, but the old guy says, wait a second. I think there's, you know, right. Give me just a minute. And he goes away in some, in the nether regions and comes back and he's got the part. And it's because he knew what it was. And maybe the kids, if it's not there on the computer, then to them, they can't process that it still could possibly be back in the inventory.
Sure.
You know, and we see that a lot. I think it is. So what got you geared up on cars and in this hobby? And I know you do a lot more than the Piston Foundation. We're going to talk about that if you will stick around in the next segment. But what got you started in this?
Well, I'm of a generation, like I said, that still grew up, you know, with my own toolbox and tinkering out in the driveway. So, my brother and I were just, you know, kids that made things. We just, and for me early on, actually it was more bicycles were my thing. And, we would build, you know, gather all the old parts we could and build new bikes. And that was kind of my thing. And I actually did that for a long time. I ended up running a bike shop and building custom road bikes when Greg LeMond won the Tour de France.
Right.
Cycling exploded. I was kind of in that world at that time and ended up having some great years just building custom road bikes. And that was a great time. I really, really enjoyed being in the shop every day. Somehow or another, I veered off into a different path into business.
Right.
And sometimes I wish I had stayed in the shop.
Right.
But, with the Piston Foundation, I'm kind of coming full circle and getting a chance to, you know, to be involved in automotive again.
Well, and doing good things for people. I mean, that, you know, that's got to be pretty self-gratifying to know that you are helping people with their career, helping people with their lives, maybe giving them opportunities that maybe there was no path for them to go down in their mind before this came along.
Yeah, the other part of it for me is I'm a tech school grad. I went to college the first time and it didn't work out. It took me a couple of years to get sorted and I figured out where I wanted to be. And that was graphic design. And I went to a tech school, for 2 years, full time at night while I worked full time during the day.
Wow.
Because I knew what I wanted to do. And that 2 year degree, that associate's degree allowed me to build a 25 year career in design and marketing.
Wow.
And what, you know, Piston Foundation is a transition for me away from my marketing business to then now run this foundation. And, but so when I talk to kids, about, you know, their education path and the power that, you know, some technical education can have, I know it from personal experience because,
right.
You know, I was able to turn those 2 years into a career. And, you know, if you have the grit and determination to do it, it's possible for sure.
Absolutely. Do you have 15 minutes to stick around with us for the last segment?
Yeah, you bet.
All right, good. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Jeff Mason, maybe talk a little bit about the Rally Brothers. We'll talk to you in a couple of minutes.
The Classic Auto Mall is like going to the greatest indoor car showroom in the country. With more than 1,000 classic and collectible vehicles for sale via consignment in our 8-acre climate-controlled showroom, we've got something for everyone. We're open to the public most days. Plus, you can easily search our inventory online at classicautomall.com. Buying and selling via consignment is safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Find your dream classic vehicle at classicautomall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than 6 decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/AWR. That's 888-268-4783 or visit jctaylor.com/AWR. drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, join me, Roger B., every Tuesday at 1400 hours right here on America's Web Radio for the Locked and Loaded Show. We will talk about guns, weapons, ammo, gun accessories, prepping, and so much more. So be sure to join us every Tuesday at 1400 or 2 p.m. for Locked and Loaded on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show, joined via Zoom by Jeff Mason, the president and COO of the Piston Foundation. How can people get involved? How can people help this process and this cause that you guys are involved in?
So the easiest thing to do is to go to pistonfoundation.org. So pistonfoundation.org. And what I would ask is that people do three things. Number one, sign up for our newsletter. And that'll get you information about what we're doing, volunteer opportunities. But also, you'll get to read interviews that we do with our scholars and hear, you know, hear the voice of today's young technician and what's driving them. And it's really inspirational to see them and hear their stories. The second thing is, if you can, make a donation. You know, every donations of every size make a difference. They go directly into our scholarship program. So donations will be funding, you know, the career, path for an aspiring technician. And then if you can, please refer a young person that you know who may have an interest to our scholarship program. And that'll help. We'll send them some information. They'll be able to, you know, assess whether this is something they want to do. But, you know, really what they're going to understand is that there's an organization out there to help them if this is the path they want to take. And they're going to get some information about how they can do that. So sign up for the newsletter, make a donation if you can, and definitely refer a future Piston scholar.
I love that. I think that's so critical, because there are people that we might know that would be great at this or great candidates for this, that don't realize what path that they have to go down. And so that's fantastic. And so happy that you guys are doing this. And I love the name, the Piston. Thank God it's not the Lithium Foundation, because, you know.
Yeah.
That's my rant for electric cars for the day. Sorry, guys. I had to.
very subtle EV dig.
Yeah, just a little one. I'm not completely against them. I'm just somewhat against them. So anyway, so apparently you wear another hat, and that is a navigator with the Rally Brothers. Not only are you running rallies, but you're running the Melee in, not in the U.S. Yeah. You're going across the pond.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the other part of how I'm connected to automotive. Back in 2016, my brother and I decided to start doing vintage rally racing. And, because we like to jump into the deep end, the first thing we did was the Carrera Panamericana in Mexico.
Nice. Love it.
And, we've now raced that three times and done, pretty well there. We've had some good success running our 65 Volvo Amazon, which runs in the historic A class. So it's a 2-liter class.
What are you up against? What other vehicles are you racing against?
Real common cars would be BMW 2002s, Porsche 912s, some sort of hopped up VWs, Datsun 510, Porsche 914.
Nice. The Datsun 510 and the Volvo Amazon are two of the coolest of that class. I think those 510s are cool, but the Amazon, and your car is not just some stock, but I mean, this thing's got everything done to it, right? I mean, you guys have spent a few bucks on this thing. Even got a bottle opener, I see.
What? Oh, it does. Yes. We've got a custom bottle opener on the rear where the gas fill used to be. That has a very special name. That is called the Shoe. And we put that there in honor of Michael Shoemaker,
right,
who another vintage rally nut from Nebraska. And he and his wife Christy have raced the Carrera a few times. We met them the very first year, and they helped us learn the ropes.
And it's 2,000 miles, is that correct? Is that
it varies a little bit, usually more like 2,500. And
right.
That race runs currently from the south of Mexico to the north, city to city. Right. And so it's cities like Veracruz, Oaxaca, Mexico City, Morelia, Querétaro, Zacatecas, right. Durango, San Luis Potosi, things like that. Yep.
And people, if you don't know about the La Carrera and the history of that thing, the manufacturers were in the 50s were getting involved in a big way, bringing their big bore, fastest of the fast cars there and running wide open through the country, right? I mean, it was, it was a little bit organized chaos, or maybe not organized back then.
Yeah, it was a pretty extreme race. They didn't have, it was right now it runs in, rally format. Then right. It was just a point to point race each day and, right. and it ended, it did not start the 55 race because in 54 there was, they decided at the end that there were just too many fatalities right. and not only drivers, but also spectators and it's still, there was a death last year, so it's still a very serious race. Kind of automotive adventure that, I think is entirely unique in the world right now.
I assume you've made a lot of, friends from down there as well, too, over the years of doing this.
We do. We have a lot of friends. And one of the things, because my brother and I like to just, again, do things over out at the extreme edge. One of the things we started doing was making films about the Carrera. And so in 2019, we made our first film, called The Rally Brothers, and, we built a whole production team down in Mexico, around, a good friend of ours, Julian Castillo, who is our producer.
Right.
And so, not only did we meet all the racers, but we also have a whole film crew and a production team down, based in Mexico City that help us, with our project.
And they're more avid car people than you realize. Just watch Formula One from, or IndyCar or anything that's raced down there. I mean, they're really into it. And yet there's not a lot of avenues for them. So I would imagine that this is a big deal for them.
It is. Carrera. The Carrera Panamericana is a cultural icon for the country of Mexico. And it is well loved. I mean, we, in Mexico City, when we arrive, there's two amazing things. One, we meet up outside the city and we get a police escort straight into the Zocalo, right in the center of town. Mm-hmm. And they tell us that even the president doesn't get that, meaning right. don't even close the streets for the president, but they do for the Carrera. And then, there's about 200,000 people show up.
Wow.
In Mexico City, and it's smaller versions of that in every city. So sure. if you want to be a rock star for 7 days, get yourself a car and figure it out and go race the Carrera Panamericana because that's what it's like.
What's the fastest class that runs in that? Is that what's
Turismo Mayor, which is the Studebakers that run at the top of the class.
Right.
They are 650 horsepower tube framed. I mean, they're basically NASCARs. They're
sure.
slightly detuned
sure.
NASCAR
wow.
cars.
And it's got to be a lot of fun. I bet it's hotter than hell, but I bet it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. But, for us, I mean, it's the adventure of it, right? And it's the stress of it, the demands of it are really the fun. It's a test of your ability as a team to get yourself through a very complex kind of racing situation. Performance consistency is really important. Preserving your car is very important. So over, those 2000 miles of racing, there's a lot of strategic decisions and you have to work together and things happen, right? Things always happen,
right.
Never perfect. And so you got to deal with that. And, it's just, we love to do that. And at the end of the day, at the end of every day, you get a chance, have something cold to drink and swap stories with the other drivers. And there is a lot of camaraderie in that. It's what they call the spirit of La Carrera,
right.
which means, that family, of people that you've, been a part of.
And the name of your car that you run, its nickname or its name, if you will, is Mezcal.
It's called the Mezcalero.
Is that a maker of mezcal? What does that mean?
Yes, it is. Technically it is. And it came from, in our very first year we ran it, we lost our license plate, about halfway through the race. Our rear license plate got rattled off. And at some point our crew made like a phony vanity plate. And when my brother, when we got the car back to New York, he had to replate it because you know, we'd lost the plate, right? So we had to replate it. And he was able to register the car with a vanity plate in New York State, Mescalero.
Wow. That is so cool.
Real honor. And everybody always wondered, is that the real plate? And I'm like, yep, that's a New York State registered plate, the Mescalero.
Yeah, I love that. That's fantastic. Do you, obviously the Mille Miglia is a different kind of race. It's not, a little different thing. Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are you, what's your gut?
Yeah, we're really excited. We got invited to race, the Mille Miglia U.S. warm up in November. And we won our class. We were able to race the Mescalero there, and that gave us a guaranteed entry for the race in this June in Italy. And so we've got a 1939 Fiat 508C called a Balila that we're going to race, and we've been getting ready for the time speed distance challenges right. that are a part of that. That's been a new challenge that we wanted to take. So, you know, the Carrera is really about speed. And, so, you know, we want to keep rallying and we want to take on a new challenge. So the Mille was one of the races out there on our hit list. And so we're really happy to have the chance to race it this year.
Sure.
And, we hope to do well. We're working hard to be ready.
Any thoughts on racing at the race in your backyard, the Pikes Peak Hill Climb?
You know, I have really wanted to race that. It has gotten really difficult. There was a time, when it was a little more accessible, but once it got paved and then they used to allow rally teams to run it with a co-driver.
Right.
And we actually have some friends, who, raced it, won their class there, and it was always on our radar. But I think the game has been upped a little too far now. But I love to be there. We love to go see it. And, it's a great week of racing sure. there. But, I think it's a little beyond our rally car right. world now.
Well, they do hill climbs around here, and the Sports Car Club of America puts them on, and the Blue Mountain region puts one on up in Redding. They race up to the Pagoda, and I went to watch it because yep. I was going to do it. And I thought, this yep. is going to be fun and cool. And I went up all the way to the top and watched them. They're doing 160 up there in these BMW M3s with a, you know, yep. narrow road. And I'm like, that seems a little too much racing for, you know, I wanted this to be a little less intense, right?
Yeah. So we were looking at a couple of hill climbs this year, but it just didn't sort of fit into the schedule for us. And, the car needs to get prepped for some other things. So we didn't right. have the, we decided not to put the miles on the engine. So.
Sure. Well, you have to be a little bit selective. I mean, you just can't just order a new set of whatever anytime you want. You know, it's not cheap.
Yeah, the Mescalero is a full-on race car. You know, it is street legal because it's a rally car. That sure. is what is required. But it's, you know, it's this 1965 Amazon shell, full roll cage inside.
Nice.
You know, its suspension is all, that's the other, among the things we did, you know, it's got a B20 engine that's not highly tuned. It's rally tuned, so it's reliable, and it makes about 185 horsepower. So it's got some pull.
It doesn't weigh a lot, right? What, it can't weigh what? 25?
Yeah, we're at about 2000.
Yeah. So that's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. We take as much weight as we can out. We pretty much got that car, I think, sorted as it can be.
Right.
In terms of, you know, plexi windows, fiberglass hood and deck. The Amazon is very strong. It has a great rally pedigree, and it's very predictable. So there are certain parts of that car that we could lighten, but we don't want to because it would start to
sure.
diminish some of the durability. And for the Carrera, for its purpose, you absolutely need the most durable car you can have.
Sure.
It's a really, really hard on the car. So
well, continued success and not only in the Rally Brothers and the Mille Miglia, but certainly with the great work you guys do with the Piston Foundation. And thanks so much for being on the show today, Jeff. We really appreciate
it. Thanks, Stuart. It was great to be here.
All right. Take care, man. We'll catch you next week on the Classic Auto Mall show. See you then.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall show with your host, Stuart Howden, executive producer, Steve Safier.
Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Questions, answers, or comments? Write us at ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you want to talk about buying a classic car seen on our website, you're looking for a particular vehicle, or want to consign your classic for sale, write us at info@ClassicAutoMall.com or call and talk to a real live classic car specialist at 888-227-0914. That's 888-227-0914. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit pattravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.